Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers Nation? Happy Sunday. Welcome in to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. Thank you so much for being here today. And that's actually where I want to start. It has been a crazy month in Packers land. We have seen a trade for Micah Parsons, a epic win against Detroit to start the season, and then a handful of days later, a huge win against Washington, a defense that is playing out of its mind, and a team that seems to be a legitimate Super Bowl contender. It has been a very fun last month. And with that, we have seen our numbers here on Pack-A-Day just absolutely explode as of this past, as of recording this, we are currently the 50th ranked sports podcast nationwide. All sports, for any national shows, team shows, and in fact, we're the third ranked team-specific show of any team. There's only a Bills one and a Vikings one, so keep listening. We got to beat the Vikings one that are currently ahead of us. But to think of a random idea late night, I don't even know how many years ago it was now, to put together a Packers podcast, a daily Packers podcast, and just so we could talk Packers every day into everything that this has become, I cannot thank you guys enough. Thank you for making Pack-A-Day part of your daily routine. Appreciate all the likes, the comments, the subscriptions, the memberships. It has been a unbelievable past month and really just from the day that we've started up until now. So thank you so much for your incredible support. I really cannot say it enough, and I really cannot appreciate it enough. You guys are, of course, the lifeblood of what we do. I would love to say that we wouldn't be here without you. We would be doing this in some way, shape, or form. It would just be a whole heck of a lot less fun if nobody was listening or watching. So thank you so much for being here, and I'll start with that today. I don't say it anywhere near often enough, but wanted to certainly express my gratitude for everything that you've done to make this podcast what it is today. And certainly a huge shout out to the Pack-A-Day podcast team as well. Would not be certainly here without them in any way, shape, or form. Also, a huge thank you to our new members, Brian Moravic, Rogaine Rabbit, James Warner, and Bethany Faskell. Thank you guys for signing up as well. It's Sunday. There is football today. There's no Packers football, but these are the perfect days for Luigi's Pizzas. Just throw it in for breakfast. Luigi's tweeted at me the other day. There's like, you just make a whole day of it, right? You start with the breakfast pizza in the morning, maybe an ultra thin crust at noon. And then, as you get to that midday, maybe you put in some garlic dippers as a snack. And then just as you're starting to get hungry again at night, you know, throw one of like the big daddy ones in with all the extra cheese and meats and everything like that. That's a day. You know, throw a football in the background, and what more could you possibly want on a Sunday? Of course, check them out over at luigispizza.com and on social media at Luigi's Pizza. Speaking of game day, there are some interesting ones to kind of keep an eye on from a Packers perspective today. The first one is Bears-Lions at noon. You have 0-1 Bears versus 0-1 Lions. And I think the loser of this game, what happens to that team gets really interesting, right? I think we all expect the Lions to win this game. But if you don't have, if either of these teams lose, it just is more interesting to see how they kind of respond to it. 0-2 in the Ben Johnson era with that, you know, really devastating loss in week one to Minnesota. It would also be 0-2 in the division for either of these teams that lose. That's a tough way to start the season. Does Caleb Williams look better? Does this Lions team with those big question marks at, you know, pass rush opposite Aiden Hutchinson and on the interior of the offensive line, did they look better? I think this is a really interesting one in the division to keep an eye on. I would never say you're necessarily like cheering for the Bears in this one, but I would say that probably a Bears result would be better, although maybe Chicago just gets off into that 0-2 start. And from a Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson standpoint, yeah, do they recover from that? We saw a team last year in Chicago that once adversity hit with that loss against Washington on the Hail Mary, they were never the same again. you never quite know what's going to happen in Chicago. So certainly some intrigue in the NFC North in that one. Browns, Ravens. A couple things here. First of all, the Ravens are the, you know, one of the great teams right now. And I know we saw them collapse kind of in week one as well against Buffalo, but they're a really good team. Green Bay faces them later in the season. And as you look at teams that are contenders, as Green Bay tries to stay and remain in that conversation, you always want to keep an eye on the other contenders. And certainly Baltimore is that. But more importantly here, your week three opponent, the Cleveland Browns, are in this game. If Baltimore does win this as expected, it would put the Browns at 0-2. And you would think make them even a little bit more desperate going into week three. But that's certainly one to keep an eye on as well. Chiefs, Eagles, 325. Again, Eagles, both of these teams in that inner circle of contenders. But Eagles in the NFC right there with Green Bay and arguably still the team to beat. They're the team that won it last year and the defending Super Bowl champions. They go up against KC. Not only is this just an epic game, but it's going to be worth keeping an eye on Philly through the remainder of this year. And then at 720, you've got Falcons, Vikings. How does J.J. McCarthy follow up that fourth quarter, the pretty epic fourth quarter after a three disastrous quarter appearance early in that game? I'm really interested to see how he plays. Do the Vikings get to 2-0 or do they fall to 1-1? Again, another key one to watch in the NFC North. So certainly things to watch. As far as the news and notes side, I do want to point out that Jason Wilde just recently reported on their radio show that there are like legitimate talks still going on with Quay Walker and the Green Bay Packers. And I think he said something like it's close-ish or that it continues to be, you know, something where progress is being made. I have heard some whispers of this as well. So if there's any thought of like, hey, Tyron Hopper could be up and coming. They gave Micah Parsons that huge contract. Maybe they're not as interested in Quay anymore. It should be noted that, first of all, Goody has been on the record on multiple occasions of saying that they are working to get something done with Quay Walker. I do still expect that to be the case. And he's got that C on his chest for team captain, that green dot on the back of his helmet calling the plays. He has been really good in the middle of that defense, and that tandem of Quay and Cooper looks really, really good right now. I think probably wise for Green Bay to continue to have those conversations and hopefully get something done sooner rather than later. It seems like Green Bay is in a mode right now of, hey, can we get some of these guys under contract sooner rather than later so we don't have to work with that in the offseason? And re-signing the core of this team and keeping it intact seems to be at top of mind. We've already seen Christian Watson, now Quay Walker continues to be worked on. Devontae Wyatt, fifth-year option picked up. Daniel Whelan, you know, is getting the extension. Matt Orzech gets the extension. So that seems to be the direction that they've been going in as of late. And I think it's the right decision to be made. And certainly with the way Quay is playing right now, I am all for him getting that extension as well. Let's get to our main topic for today. And that is, what have we learned from this Packers team through 2 weeks? As we go through this, right, sometimes you, especially it's early in the season, we're still, I don't think we've still completely and totally digested the whole Micah Parsons things yet, that he's a Green Bay Packer. We've certainly seen it live and in living color for, you know, everything that he can bring to the table these past couple weeks, but we just started to digest that. And then the Packers beat the Lions. And as soon as you just start to, you know, get your mind around that, they beat the Commanders. And it's like, all right, now we have an actual moment to just like take a pause and say, all right, what have we picked up through these 2 weeks so far that may be of interest? So let's go through it. I've got more than a handful of things that I want to get through. We'll start with number one, a healthy Jordan Love matters. Jordan looks right where he left off, I would say, at the end of 2023. That was maybe a slightly more epic again version of it, but he looks so confident in the pocket, so confident in the offense, knowing where to go with the football, his ability to step up and let it rip. He just looks healthy, confident, and totally, I would say totally different than he felt with, you know, the time last year when he was going through the injuries. I think it's just, again, some simple stuff of feeling confident, stepping up and planting in the pocket. It just feels like, you know, the ball is exploding out of his hand a little bit better. And I think to me, when he's playing like that, even the scramble we saw where he's, you know, able to lower his shoulder, when you go through the MCL injury into the groin injury, then you had the hand injury at the end of the year, it just never quite felt like he was 100%. And we never saw the real Jordan Love in 2024. That is not to say that he has been 100% perfect or there's not a couple things he can still clean up, specifically maybe with the deep ball and some things like that. That's still true. There are still a couple things that he can certainly tweak and get better at. But it just looks like a very different Jordan Love than anything we saw in 2024. And again, that's not to say he was bad in 2024 or that, you know, he couldn't hold his own or anything like that. It's just a different level of confidence and a different level of play that you see with him stepping in the pocket, ripping some of these throws, and really hitting all layers of the field at any given moment. He looks healthy. It certainly seems like he's playing healthy, and we've seen a different Jordan Love than I think we saw in 2024 through these first two games, and that certainly seems to be a key takeaway for this offense so far. Number two, the run game is still a work in progress. This is normal for the beginning of the year. It's not something that I would panic on so far. They still had like 130 yards rushing in totality in the second week, even though, again, it was a little bit more tough sledding for Josh Jacobs with, like, I think 3.7 yards per carry. I think there was a hope maybe that moving on from Josh Myers, getting Aaron Banks in that lineup, and then even, you know, bringing in guys like Anthony Belton, who has the big size and bulk, and we saw him to a large extent in week two, and Darren Kennard, who's a bigger guy in week one, that bringing in some of these bigger bodies and kind of just moving on from Josh Myers would set up this run game for even more success. I still believe that is going to be the case wholeheartedly. I really, truly do. I think this is more of just this offensive line getting their rhythm and timing and just getting it, you know, everything a little bit more in tune as the course of the season goes along. It's not uncommon for the defenses, especially in the trenches, to be a little bit ahead of the offenses at this point. So I'm still very hopeful that this offensive line is going to be able to open some of those holes up for Josh Jacobs. But as of so far, it's been tough sledding inside, and it's been a little bit more of a work in progress. If you're looking for something that, you know, Green Bay can continue to get better at and continue to work on and can, you know, show actual improvement on over these next few weeks, I think getting that run game a little bit more tuned up and focused and, you know, just being able to get Josh Jacobs some of those more explosive runs has got to be top of mind, because if they get that going, now you get the play action off of that. And then even what we've seen from this passing offense already, where they've been pretty successful even without the success of the running game, that to me is where everything clicks in. And if the offense gets clicked in with the way that we've seen this defense play so far, it's a really difficult proposition for opposing teams. It's just going to be a very difficult team to stop. So still a work in progress, still a lot of hope there, but it is something that Green Bay needs to improve upon as they get into the season a little bit further. We'll be right back. This episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, you and I make decisions every single day, but on Prize Picks, being right can get you seriously paid. Now, don't miss any of the excitement this season on Prize Picks, where it is good to be right. Green Bay is 2-0, and after a mini bye, they are set to take on Cleveland in their first road game of the season. And I'll tell you right now, I'm going to be going heavy on Matthew Golden and Edgerrin Cooper in this matchup. I'm also going to be keeping a close eye on Josh Allen, AJ Brown, and Ashton Jeanty in week three. Now, some of you may be new, so let me just tell you, Prize Picks is super simple. Just pick more or less on 2-6 player stat projections, and if you get your picks right, you could cash in. Lately, I've been really enjoying Flex Play, which allows you to still cash out even if your lineup isn't perfect. You can double your money even if one of your picks doesn't hit. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code Packaday to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code Packaday to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code Packaday, Prize Picks. It is good to be right. Hey friends, there are certain fall aesthetics that just bring back a multitude of personal and family memories that can't simply be replaced. A perfect autumn bonfire, the smell of fallen leaves, and of course, the best smell of them all, a perfect cut of meat searing wonderfully on a hot grill. And you know what season it is in Green Bay? It's tailgating season. That's why I already have a whole host of beautiful Omaha steaks ready for the grill this football season. I went with their fall bestsellers pack, which includes filet mignons, pork chops, jumbo franks, chicken breasts, and so much more. Now, Omaha Steaks has been America's original butcher since 1917. It's a family-owned company that has over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. And the best part is that every steak is perfectly aged to maximize tenderness. So get fired up for fall grilling with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Red Hot Sale event. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code PACKADAY at checkout. That's 50% off at omahasteaks.com and an extra $35 with promo code PACKADAY at checkout. See site for details. Number three, wide receiver is exactly what we thought it was going to be. There is no true number one, although we have seen quite a bit of Romeo Doubs. And as far as outside wide receiver goes, it is Romeo Doubs is kind of the main guy on the outside. But this is very much still a wide receiver by committee approach. Now, Jaden Reed goes down with an injury. We'll see how that affects things moving forward. You're also going to get Christian Watson back here in the next few weeks, maybe month at the most, you would think. So we'll see how that affects things as well. But there was this idea still that maybe somebody's going to step up. And I'm not saying that maybe somebody couldn't, but Matthew Golden, first round pick, he's going to come in and he's going to be the guy. Or, Dobbs is the veteran in the group. He's going to be the guy. Jaden Reed's going to be the guy. Dontayvion Witt, whoever it might be, it just isn't. The targets are sprayed all over the place. That includes the running backs and the tight ends as well. There isn't necessarily that go-to target, and that's totally fine. This is what we've come to expect from this group of weapons. There hasn't been a level of selfishness or arrogance within that group. They're all willing to let everyone else be successful. And that is actually, to me, something that you can continue to be successful with moving forward. Sure, if one of these guys wants to step up and be a 8-for-160 guy every single week, sure, by all means, go ahead, do that. But this is still a wide receiver group that the snaps are still going to be rotated in quite a bit for a different group of wide receivers, almost on any given play or any given week. You're going to certainly see guys get different shares of targets. Some people are going to get different plays depending on, different opportunities depending on the plays that are called. And it's going to vary, I think, quite a bit week to week. We've seen already like Romeo Doubs, Matthew Golden going to get quite a bit of playing time, Wicks as well, but we're already seeing the inclusion of somebody like Savion Williams get much more involved. If you would have told me that Savion Williams through like the first like couple months of the season was just a healthy scratch and they kind of let him develop a little bit more, I probably would have believed you. He's already seen an increase in his snap count week two over week one. There's a lot of excitement there for Savion Williams. Matthew Golden, I think, feels a lot different if Jordan just connects on those two passes and he has those two explosive plays, right? He's right there. Some of the routes that he's running are extremely crisp. He's getting open deep. I'm very excited about what he's bringing to the table as well. But this is a wide receiver by committee. It's a group approach, and I don't see that changing anytime soon at all. Number four, we had this idea, this thought, that the Tucker Kraft breakout was going to be a thing this season. It seems very legit. He looks fantastic. Still think there's some things that he can clean up from a run blocking standpoint, but man, outside of that, as a receiver, he looks a lot more nuanced in his route running. I mean, the run after the catch has always been spectacular, and he just is bringing a different level of consistency to the table where it feels like he is a true, legitimate, big-time weapon in this offense. I would say the last couple of years, he was a piece of the equation, and you always felt like if you got him the ball, good things were going to happen. Now it feels like he is a core piece and somebody that you are constantly trying to involve and find ways to get him the football. Again, the run after the catch, the ability to break tackles, that stuff is what's special. I said, somebody asked me on chat the other day of like, what's his ceiling? I think a slightly worse blocking George Kittle is still at, we're starting to see the receiving portion of the George Kittle come along. If he could just improve a little bit as a blocker, I think we make that comp pretty easily, but he's right there. And we're already seeing a very impressive tight end in year three. And that breakout has certainly started to happen already early on in this season. Number five, the newfound offensive line depth is already paying off huge. I've said this, I don't know how many times over the last couple seasons with Jordan Morgan, Anthony Belton, and then, obviously not to the same extent with Darian Kennard, but that's an important pickup as well. But I understand when you pick Jordan Morgan in the first round, yeah, there's a Cooper DeJean there. I understand when you take Anthony Belton in the second round, maybe there's a Trey Amos or another player that you would have liked at that same spot. At some point, if you don't make those type of picks, it's really difficult to find depth, upside, talent, et cetera, on your offensive line. It's just one of the things that you have to do as a general manager every now and again is just spend a high draft pick on an offensive lineman, even when there's a sexier pick that's out there. Because if you don't, you end up with an offensive line that is completely lacking in talent and depth, and that's not where you want to be. So imagine right now that Jordan Morgan and Anthony Belton aren't on this team. And going into that week two game, right? And Belton starts at right tackle, plays a ton. Morgan starting at left guard. And the offensive line plays really well throughout the course of that game. it's a totally different story if you don't have those two. And again, I'm not saying that they were necessarily perfect picks or that whatever the case may be, but at some point in time, you do have to address those needs and those, you know, just the depth along the offensive line. And I think having those two has already paid off big this year. And then the Darian Kennard trade as well, a future sixth round pick to go out and get him as, you know, if we want to call it the eighth offensive lineman in this scenario, that's already paid off huge as well. So I know again that, you know, you see some of these trades or the, you know, the early draft picks on offensive linemen, it's like, oh, did they really need to do that? Could they have not gone with maybe something that was, you know, maybe a little bit flashier, sexier, et cetera. I get it, but I really love that they continue to invest in the offensive line. It's never a bad idea. I know it sometimes doesn't feel great and the process isn't the most fun in the world, but it pays off huge. And I think we've already seen that through the course of this season. The Aaron Banks signing, same thing, right? And I know he played one game. He was fine in that game. Second game, he was out injured, but it's really difficult to find offensive line depth when you don't have it. And Goody continued to put resources into it with a first-round pick in Jordan Morgan last year, second-round pick in Belton this year, trading for Kennard, signing Aaron Banks, and those moves have, again, already paid off huge. So kudos to Goody there. And again, we see the value of having that depth along the offensive line. Number six is, I hope you did not sell that Devontae Wyatt or LVN stock, because that stock right now is starting to go up and up and up and up. And there was, for LVN, I think some hope during camp where all of that talent was starting to show itself. Before the trade for Micah Parsons, he had been the most disruptive defensive lineman in training camp for Green Bay. And still everyone was like, let's just kind of wait to see if he can do it in the regular season. I don't want to jump to any conclusions here. We know he's talented. We know he has the upside. He's made some plays in practice before. Can he do it in games? And we have seen a totally different LVN through the first 2 weeks of the season than we have seen in his career so far. That jump has been legitimate. It is tangible. It is real. We can see it, and it's happening in real time. Really, really fun to see. Devontae was almost the opposite. I'm not sure there was a player who had a more quiet training camp for a player that had expectations than Devontae Wyatt. He barely made a peep. There was barely a mention of Devontae Wyatt in training camp. And yet he has come out and played the best football of his career. I've been astounded with what I've seen from Devontae Wyatt. For somebody who has been really just a rotational kind of pass rushing piece for Green Bay, they basically said, nope, you're going to play, you know, play full time on the interior and you're going to do a little bit of everything. He's held up against the run better than I have ever seen him in his career. He's been more disruptive. He's getting to the quarterback. Like, this has been really, really good Devontae Wyatt. Those first round picks where you're like, oh, I'm not sure they're ever going to live up to it. We're starting to see them live up to it. I love what I'm seeing from Wyatt. I love what I'm seeing from LVN. And those jumps in year four for Wyatt, year three for LVN are finally seeming like they're real and that we're getting them. And if that does become the case and they continue to play like this, what a huge win for this defense. And this defensive front is just going to be a real terror to have to go against with Micah and Gary and now LVN and Wyatt playing the way that they are, not to mention Wooden and some others as well, Carl Brooks. But those two are starting to really take that leap, and it's been really fun to watch through the first 2 weeks of the season so far. Number seven, Kenny Clark and TJ Slayton, who they don't need those guys. They don't need the big run stuffers up front. Green Bay's held the two teams combined, Washington and Detroit, to under 100 yards combined in rushing over the first 2 weeks. That is a remarkable statistic. And after trading away Kenny, you're like, you know, it's probably a necessary evil to bring in Micah Parsons. You're more than willing to do that. But man, how Green Bay has seemingly improved in run defense without Slayton or Kenny in there has been really impressive to watch for these first 2 weeks. And hopefully that continues. But man, all the credit we already said for Devontae Wyatt, but Colby Wooden and Carl Brooks, I mean, those three are getting almost all the time on the interior. You're talking about 2-3 techniques, really, in Wyatt and Carl Brooks, who are more penetrating pass rushing types. And then Colby Wooden, who went from like a 270-pound, you know, college defensive end slash defensive tackle, who now put on a bunch of weight to try to become a little bit more of a run-stuffing presence. Even then, he's probably, what, at like 305 maybe at best? It's really impressive to see what those three have done on the interior. And then one of the things I've talked about and one of the reasons I was confident in the run defense after the departure of Kenny Clark, and of course, TJ Slayton had already happened at that point, was because this was a real team effort on defense last year with how they stopped the run. Yeah, you had a couple of good run stuffers inside, but it was everyone. It was the linebackers playing better, the edges getting set better, gap integrity, everyone doing their job, safeties coming from depth, corners helping. It was really all 11 playing good run defense, which was a difference. We saw it under Jeff Hafley. They just emphasized it a whole heck of a lot more. And I was hopeful that that would carry over, but there's still some concern of like, hey, if your interior just isn't big enough, can you hang? And if not, is that just a fatal flaw in the middle of the defensive line? It wasn't a fatal flaw. Those guys have been playing out of their mind. And shout out again to Carl Brooks, Colby Wooden, and Devontae Wyatt, and to a slightly lesser extent, Nazir Stackhouse as well. But those guys have held up well inside, and the run defense has been really, really good so far. Number eight, it's probably the most surprising one. Micah Parsons actually does make your team better. It's amazing. The run defense actually doesn't get that much worse. And man, go back 3 weeks and draw up your perfect start to Micah Parsons' first 2 weeks as a Green Bay Packer, and you could not have asked for anything better. I did talk to somebody in the organization, and they said that the person has been as good, if not better, than the player on the field. Take that for what it's worth. I mean, like that's incredible, right? For as amazing as he's been on the field, that him inside the building has been as good, if not better. I don't know what Dallas was doing. I cannot thank Jerry Jones enough. They acquired a legitimate stud on the team from a personnel standpoint. And it seems like the exact person that they needed in that locker room to have not only that spark, but for everyone to be, again, kind of drawn to his energy, his excitement. And it just, I've said it before, the right player, right time for the right reasons on the right team. This was the move to make. Kudos to Goody for making it. But yeah, Micah Parsons does actually, in fact, make your team a better football team. Thank you again, Dallas Cowboys. We cannot appreciate it enough. Number nine, there is no second year slump or sophomore hangover or anything else for Edrian Cooper. That dude is a bona fide stud on the second level of the defense. He looks incredible already through 2 weeks of the season. He is flying around. He is making plays. He is a complete menace. And we haven't even seen like the big time, like shooting the gaps for a 5 yard loss. I think he did share a sack with Micah this past game, but some of the stuff that we know he's capable of, they haven't even really needed to get into some of that stuff so far. That stuff will continue to happen as well, but just his consistency. And this was the thing, if I'm being totally honest about Micah, I knew that the big flashy plays would be there. That's never going away. He is way too freaky and way too talented that those plays, and just has good instincts too, that those are always going to happen. And you're going to start seeing them, I think, happen with a little bit more regularity here as well. But I did wonder of like, can he become a true down-to-down consistent linebacker? In year one, we saw him line up in the wrong gap from time to time. We saw him, even Matt LaFleur kind of defined it as like, hey, there's a lot of times where he's actually doing the wrong thing, but somehow finding a way to make it right because he's just that talented, right? But could he find a way to do the right thing at the right time and what he's supposed to be doing and then letting that, you know, insane athleticism take over? And that's where we've seen him be really impressive so far. It's the consistency. It's how he's playing. He is taking his job extremely serious, and he is doing everything to not maybe make the wrong read, but make it right with his athleticism. He is making the right play and then letting his raw natural ability take over. It's everything that you could have possibly wanted. There's also that question of like, hey, with losing Anthony Campanelli as linebackers coach, was that going to affect Quay and Cooper? No. The linebackers looked even better to me. So huge shout out to, what is it, Sean Duggan, I think it is. He's been fantastic so far. And the linebackers have been really, really good. So great to see that even losing Campanelli to defensive coordinator in Jacksonville, that linebacker group has really been up to the task so far through the first two games of the season. We'll be right back. Let's see, number 10, who needs a corner one when you've got a defensive back by committee approach? I talked about this in the offseason when people kept saying like, hey, you traded away, or you cut, I should say, Jaire Alexander. You know, Eric Stokes is gone. You didn't invest a ton. It's just Nate Hobbs. Keyshawn Nixon's not going to be good enough. Carrington Valentine was a 7th round pick. You don't have the pieces that you need there. And I just kept saying of like, go back and watch how they won a season ago. It wasn't because any one cornerback was locking up anyone in man coverage or anything like that. They played very sound team defense. Everyone knew exactly what they were supposed to do. The communication was uncanny, and it was a defensive back. It was a team approach in the defensive backfield. It wasn't just one guy doing the heavy lifting. And that's what we've seen so far this year. The safeties and the corners playing off of each other, playing to each other's strengths, communicating everything, knowing their assignments so that when something gets passed off from one player to another, everyone knows exactly what's going on. The communication, just going back to that for a second, has been out of this world outstanding with how they're passing off different concepts and things like that. They don't probably have, you know, I'm not going to say anything that they can't have a Pro Bowl corner or anything like that. Maybe Carrington Valentine or Keyshawn Nixon or even Nate Hobbs can get there, but maybe they don't have that. I don't care. If this defensive backfield continues to play the brand of football that they've played through these first 2 weeks of the season against a couple of good offenses, I have zero concern of like, oh, they don't have Darrell Revis or a Deion Sanders or even a, you know, Jaire Alexander back when he was playing as well as he was. I don't care. These guys know how to play in this system. They are well tuned into what Jeff Hafley wants them to do. And this defensive back by sort of committee or just this team defensive approach is really, really working. They've bought into it. And I love what I've seen from the secondary so far. Number 11, Brandon McManus is human after all. After being perfect almost all offseason, he did have the miss the other day. It's not to say that I'm concerned about it, but it's just a reminder that, hey, sometimes these things can still go wrong in certain moments. It was not exactly a short field goal. Was it like a 48 yarder, I want to say, goes off the left post, but he's going to be totally fine. This is not some huge commentary there, but again, if you're just thinking, nope, every single field goal is going to be made because you have Brandon McManus, well, it still, has the ability to have some human elements pop up from time to time. So as dominant and perfect as he was all throughout the offseason, one moment there where he maybe showed a little bit of his human side. Number 13, the defense has been so insanely good in spite of Jeff Hafley. What a unbelievably terrible job that he has done so far. It's really incredible that the talent of this defense can overcome some real terrible defensive coordinating on his end. He has no idea what he's doing from a play calling standpoint, a play design. He's just basically, you might as well have somebody blindfolded and calling plays out there. Definitely not head coaching material. I can't imagine that any other team would be interested in his certain brand of football. Kudos to the defensive players for really making this work despite some really, really terrible defensive coordinating. And yeah, if any other team is listening to this, cannot stress enough, just don't even consider this guy for a head coaching job because you're going to be really disappointed. He definitely he's risen to as far as he's going to go in this league as defensive coordinator. And yeah, can't imagine any team should be interested in him whatsoever. Please, please don't take him. Please don't take him. What an unbelievable job by Jeff Hafley. Absolute stud. Assistant coach of the year already, in my opinion. Book it. Right. You know, he's that freaking good. He's that dude. He deserves anything that he wants, but man, I hope he can stay in Green Bay for as long as possible, even though I'm not certainly holding my breath on that. Number 14, all that talk about the hot seat for Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst doesn't seem very hot at the moment. Don't think it ever was. Those two are going to get their extensions. I get there's a long way to go in this season. The expectations are sky high. And as soon as we start getting excited, they'll lose one game and it's going to be fire LaFleur and fire Goody. Same thing. Can't win big games or whatever. It's a very, very good GM. It's a very, very good head coach. They both know that their legacies are tied to what they do in the playoffs. They're aware of it. They know that in the NFL, you have to win big games in order to, you know, be thought of in that group of best GM, best coach, things like that. And they know that too, that talk of being on a hot seat for anybody does not go away unless you win those postseason games, right? There's always going to be that, you know, just cloud above you of, hey, yeah, you've won a ton in the regular season, but what about the playoffs? There's a long way to go here, but I feel very steadfast in the fact that they've got a great head coach. They've got a great general manager. Now they need to go out and show it. through the remainder of the season and in the playoffs. But yeah, all those whispers of a hot seat seem very calm and quiet at the moment, not surprised whatsoever. And then last but not least, number 15, the Packers are in fact legitimate Super Bowl contenders. If you weren't sure going into the season, we know now. If you weren't sure if the Micah Parsons trade was going to move the needle, we know now. This is a legitimate Super Bowl contending team. Where they end up, how they play the rest of the year, how they do in the playoffs, those things remain to be seen. Nobody's crowning anyone yet. There's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of hope of what this team can be. But I really do truly believe that this is a team that is in the highest of the high end of the top group of the top group of contenders in this league, right there with Buffalo, Baltimore, Philly, Green Bay. I think those are the four. Maybe KC in that conversation as well. Probably KC. I mean, you can't rule out KC ever. But to me, those are the five teams that I would put in that core group of contenders. Could easily be some team that comes out of nowhere. I'm not saying that that's those five and nobody else. But right now, if you were to label the five teams that you feel best about potentially winning a Super Bowl, Green Bay is right there with any of the other teams in that conversation. All right, recapping the 15 things at least I've learned about this team. A healthy Jordan Love is a really good Jordan Love. The run game is still a work in progress. Wide receiver is exactly what we thought it was. The Tucker Kraft breakout is real. The newfound offensive line depth has already paid off huge. LVN and Devontae Wyatt coming up big. And again, hope you didn't sell your stock in either player. Kenny Clark and TJ Slayton certainly missed, but this run defense has been even better than possibly thought of, you know, going into the season without those two. Micah Parsons actually does make your team better. No second year slump for Edgerrin Cooper. Who needs cornerback one when this defensive backfield as a core is playing as good as they are? Brandon McManus does have some human in him after all. The special teams still shows some cause for concern. I don't even know if I went over that one. I think I totally missed it. I'll just put it that way, right? Like there are still some creaks in the foundation of to what that special teams is. Some of the coverage stuff a little bit left to be desired. I just think not having Bo Melton and Zane Anderson out there this past game really affected some of their coverage units. Still wonder some of the return units and what you ultimately get out of that. We saw the missed field goal by McManus. So still a little bit of a work in progress there and some cracks in the foundation. Hopefully they can get that cleaned up. I do think Neiman has been a really good pickup for them right before the start of the season. So sorry, I forgot about that one, but that was supposed to be number 12. Number 13, the Packers defense, very good in spite of Jeff Hafley, and man, nobody should make him a head coaching candidate. Number 14, Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst, hot seats don't seem so hot anymore. Don't think they ever were. And the Packers are in fact legitimate Super Bowl contenders. Enjoy your Packers free NFL Sunday. These are always really fun. You've already got that win in hand going 2-0 with the huge win against Washington. And now you can kind of just enjoy a NFL red zone and spin around the league on Sunday, capped off by a Vikings-Falcons game on Sunday Night Football. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkle-Stinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Hayden Radomski, Devin Lang, Ganzusa, Alexander Newell, Dan Miller, and Titletown T. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go!